welcome. Apologies again for my absence last week. Hopefully we will be able to have a steady stream of shiurim going forward. I'm not planning to go away for... Okay, I haven't said anything important yet. I'm not planning to go away till August, and hopefully I'll give you some good notice of, before the time. Today's shiur has been sponsored, just like all the shiurim for 2023. Le'ilu Nishmais Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman, Zechronim Livracha. And we're very grateful to the sponsor for that ongoing sponsorship. Now, if I could remind you please to turn off your phones, that would be helpful too. I hope over the next few weeks, please God, to give some shiurim about food and kashrus issues, not just kashrus, but other halachic issues regarding food. We haven't talked about food for a long time, and I'm beginning to get a bit hungry for that. One of the topics that I'd like very much to deal with, which is very much in the news, is synthetic meat and genetically modified meat, etc. We will lead into that. But before we get to the fleishiks, let's start with the paravs. We might get to the milchiks as well before the fleishiks, but we'll see. One of the most painful verses in the Torah, to me, is when Dasan and Aviram in last week's Parsha turn round to Moshe and they throw in his face the expression Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. And they say to him, it's bad enough that you took us out of Mitzrayim, which was an Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. And the sheer chutzpah of being able to turn the truth on its head in that way, but we see that all the time. We see people who were perpetrators of atrocities against the Jewish people make themselves into victims and turn the Jewish people into aggressors. We see things being turned on its head all the time. And this made me think a little bit about Dvash. Also, I've had a few problems with my voice. Baruch Hashem, today, look, it sounds a little bit better. One of the things they've asked me to do, the people that have advised me, one of the remedies, I won't say cures, is to eat a certain kind of honey. Okay, so I'm on a very small amount of this honey every day. We'll see if it does any good. But that also got me thinking about, well, what's going on with honey? And I'd like, therefore, to deal with this topic as the beginning, opening salvo, if you like, of our discussion about different foods. You'll see that there's more to honey than meets the eye. This is a fascinating topic in halacha, and to a lesser degree in hashkafa, but we'll have a look at that today. So let's start with the expression that I already mentioned, Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. So you're going to jump on me immediately and say, yeah, well, that's not really honey. That's something else. So let's have a look at that first. So God introduces this at the beginning of Shemot, at the burning bush. God says to Moshe, I'm going to save the people from Mitzrayim. I'm going to bring them on Aliyah. El Eretz Tovar Chava, El Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash. A land flowing with milk and honey. Al Mokam HaKenani, Achiti Aymora, Aprizi Achivi Vavusi. So flowing with milk and honey immediately would indicate to us that there's something growing in the land of Israel or something present there which is called Dvash. This may be later identified as one of the Shiva Taminim. So have a look number two. Eretz Chital Sarai Gefen Tnei Teina. Uverimon Eretz Zayit, Uverimon, Eretz Zayit Shemen, Zayit Shemen Udvash. So what is the Dvash there? So it's obviously not, it sounds like it's not figs, because figs are already mentioned separately. As we'll see, Rashi is going to identify this with dates and date honey. So we see a mitzvah of Bikurim. Number three, Reshit Bikurei Admascha Tavi, Beit Hashem Elokecha. You have to bring the first fruits. Rashi number four on Bikurim, Reshit Bikurei Admascha, Mishivat Haminim Hamurim Beshvach Artzacha. These have to be brought from the Shivat Haminim, the Bikurim, the first fruits. He brings the Posik that I brought here, Eretz Chital Sarai Given Tzeina, Verimon Eitzeit Shem Odvash, Hudvash Dvorim, Dvash Tamarim, excuse me, Hudvash Tamarim. This is Dvash Tamarim, this is date honey, date juice, rather than bees honey. And in fact, Rashi elsewhere on the Pasuk that says you cannot bring Dvash onto the Mizbeach, Rashi says in number 5, Kol Mitikat Pri Kruya Dvash. Any sweet fruit sugar is called Dvash, that has the name Dvash, and that's why it says, and I brought the Pasuk in number 6, Kol HaMincha Asher Tekriv LaHashem Lo Sa'asu Chametz, you can't bring Chametz, Ki Kol Sa'or V'Kol Dvash any leaven and any honey, lo sektirim amenu ishel Hashem, you may not bring on the Mizbech. That was a very important halachic din. However, korban reishis takriva oisam Hashem, you must bring the korban reishis, which is the shtei halechem, which is made from chametz, from sa'or. Vel hamizbech lo yalu l'reich nechoach. But you don't bring it on the Mizbech itself. Meaning there is one offering which is made with sa'or, which is the two loaves on Shavuos, and there is one offering which involves dvash, which is the bikurim, but neither of them are brought onto the Mizbech. Okay, over the page. Rashi says here, number 7, korban reishis takrivu, you have to bring a korban reishis, that's the shtei alechem. Ma yesh lecha lavi min ha-sa'or or min ha-dvash, what do you bring from sa'or and dvash? Korban reishis shtei alechem, the korban reishis means the shtei alechem, shal atzeres on shvus abay min ha-sa'or, which has leaven in it, shenema chametz teafena, ubikurim, and what's with the bikurim? Min ha-dvash, they come from fruit, kumo bikuri te'enim utzmarim. Oh, Rashi there says not just tamarim, but also te'enim. Also figs is also something that is, and any, like you said, any kind of fruit honey, fruit sweetness is called devash. However, bees honey, which is what we're going to focus on for the rest of the shir, is also called devash in the Torah, in Tanakh, I should say. And there are two very specific episodes which I want to bring to your attention. Both of them will be familiar to you. Both of them are highly interesting. First of all, Shimshon. Remember, Shimshon goes down to meet a woman and in Timnah, and he wants to get married to her, and he betroths her. On the way down, he avoids the vineyards, the whole thing, because he's a Nazir. For number 8, the Yashav Miyamim Lakachta, many days later, sometime later, he goes down to actually marry her. But Yasalirot, it's Mapelet Ha'ariyeh, and he goes to see the carcass of the lion. What's the lion? That on his first trip down, he's attacked by a lion. And this is his first experience of his superhuman strength, and he grapples the lion and kills the lion with his bare hands. And he says, I'm going to go back. There's a mitzvah to go to a place where a nace happened to you. There's now a bracha that you say, she'aseli nace b'makom hazeh. So he goes down to see where the lion, he killed the lion. And what does he see? V'hinei adat dvorim. Adat dvorim, a whole congregation of bees. We'll see this word adat is an unusual word. You don't expect the word adat to be used. I've never seen a shul called Adas Dvorim. It would be a nice idea for a shul. I see Adas Yeshurun, etc. Adas Dvorim, there was a whole congregation of bees. But Gviat Ariyeh, in the carcass of the lion, Udvash, and there was honey there as well. The Yudehu El Kapav, Vayelech Haloch Achavachal, and he puts his hand in and he grabs some honey and he goes eating honey down on his way to Timnah. Vayelech El Aviv Elimor, he goes to his mother and father. Vayitin Lahem Vayochelu, and he gave the honey to his parents and they ate it. Vayloi Higid Lahem Ki Migviat Ha'Ariyei Rada Hadvash, but he didn't tell them that he'd got it from a lion. Why not? Because that's going to be his riddle. When he goes down and he marries and he sets a riddle and he says, from strength came forth sweetness, and they have to guess the riddle. And of course, his wife teases it out of him, and then he ends up killing 30 people, getting very angry. One of the symbolisms, maybe, of the honey for Shimshon, anyway, is that which appears sweet also comes with a sting, and that's part of his weakness for women. His weakness for women seemed sweet at the time, both with this woman in Timnah, later with Delilah, etc. But there's a sting in the tail, and that ultimately will be his downfall. So that's Shimshon with the honey. Later on in Shmuel Aleph, you have another episode with Yonatan. Here, Shaul has made a cherem, if you like, has told his soldiers, nobody is allowed to eat. As a kapara, we're going to do tshuva when we fight against the plishtim, and they come down from the hills to fight against the plishtim, and everybody is exhausted. What happens here? Number 9. V'chal ha'aretz baru b'ya'ar. All the people, aretz here means the people, they came to a forest. Now note that it's called a forest. V'yihi dvash al pnei hasadeh. And there was honey all over the field. Now what kind of honey is this? It's in a sadeh. So there were two opinions brought down by the Meforshim. One is that it's beehives. There are hives all over the field in the tree trunks that have fallen down, in the rocks, etc. And one opinion is that it's sugarcane. I didn't do any research as to whether sugarcane was indigenous to the ancient Near East at that time, but you can do that. You can do a PhD in your own time on that. But could be sugarcane, it could be honey. Interesting halachic conclusions that might come from that. If it's dvash is honey here, and it's called a ya'ar, we learn from here that dvash is considered mechubar lakarka, like a yar, like it's connected to the ground. So if somebody goes to a hive on Shabbos and pulls honey out of the hive, that could be a malacha of toilesh. Could be one of the 39 malachas that you're separating something that quote unquote grows from the ground. That could be a halachic implication. If it's sugar cane, it goes to the question of what is the brocha on sugar. And I'm not getting into this now, but you assume it's a shehakol, but there was a very significant body of opinion that it's borei pari ha'etz. Borei pari ha'etz, because this is the way that you eat from the crop, and it's called a yar, it's called a forest here. Borei pari ha'etz is often a little bit sidelined. We had a whole shiur, if you remember some time ago, on chocolate raisins. Do you remember that shiur? Yes. I told you at the time my fondness for chocolate raisins led me to reinvestigate this. And according to many poskim, the bracha on chocolate should be ha'etz as well. It's just because that's the way you eat the fruit from the cocoa tree. But we don't make a ha'etz, we make a shehakol because it's a suffix. So sugar as well, we make a shehakol. But anyway, that's a little bit of a side issue. Vayavah ha'am, the people came halayah to this forest. Vehine heilech dvash. Heilech dvash, there was a flowing honey. Targum Yonason, which I didn't bring you here, says, Beres dvushcha, dvusha, sorry. Beres, like a beres. It was like a tap that they turned on of dvusha, of honey. The Einsig Maya Yadom Alpe Elpe, but nobody put their hand into their mouth. Why? Ki Yarei Ha'am, it's a shvua. They were concerned about the shvua that Shaul had made them make that they weren't going to eat anything. The Yonatan lo shama behishbi aviv. Yonatan hadn't been there when his father had made them take the shvua. It's an arm, and he didn't know. The yishlach es ketzei hamateh. He took it, the end of his stick, asher biyado, in his hand. The yitbol, and he dipped it. Important word there. We'll see halachically coming up. Otabi yara dvash. He dipped it into the honeycomb. Let's assume it's honey for now, or into the sugar cane. The yashav yado el piv, and he put his hand back into his mouth. The ta'or na'inav, and his eyes lit up. Basically, he had a sugar rush. Okay? He was exhausted, he was fighting, and the sugar brought him round. We once had someone at our Shabbos table who was a diabetic, and at the table, he unfortunately went, I can't remember, it's hypo or hyperglycemic. He basically was low in blood sugar, hypo, and the way that we kind of brought him round is they fed him sugar. Honey, sorry. And they gave him honey to eat, and it lit up the eyes. It's not a surprise that in English, at least, we use the name honey for people that we like, for people that make us feel good. I actually traced that back. It goes back to the 1300s, the use of honey as like somebody that you love or somebody that's sweet to you. In other languages, I don't think it works as well. I don't think in Hebrew you can call someone the dusha or dvashi, but you're matuka, you call them. Motek. Okay, fine. So it lit up his eyes. It lit up his eyes because of the sugar. No, the people said to him, what are you doing? Your father made us swear, Lemor. Arur ha'ish asher yochal lechem hayom. You can't eat today. And we're all exhausted. We're all completely passing out from hunger, and you're there eating. And interestingly, Yonatan, you see some seeds of the issues going on between Yonatan and his father. But Yonatan doesn't say, oy vey, I didn't know. He says, achar avi es haaretz. My father has befuddled the people. What a ridiculous mistake to make strategically, to make your soldiers starve themselves on the day of the war. Runa, look. My eyes have been lit up. If you'd only eaten more, a little bit of the honey, you could have had an even bigger victory against the Plishtim. So it's interesting you see Yonatan going against his father publicly. This is not so straightforward, by the way. Shaul is the king, even though he's the prince. You can't just say in public, the king has made a major mistake. Anyway, he says it. So that is an interesting episode there with honey as well. In Tehillim 2, we see Yiras Hashem Tehoira, famous pasuk, Omeret La'ad, Mishpatei Hashem Emet, Sadku Yachdav, all the ways the Torah is praised. Hanechmadi Mizahav, Mipaz Rav. Torah is greater, more precious than gold and fine gold. Umutukim Midvash, it's sweeter than honey. V'nofet Sufim, which drips from the comb. There it sounds like, again, honey is, dvash means actual bees, honey. And this association with bees and honey has some interesting hashkafic implications. I'll mention three before we get deep into the halachic issues. First of them is a surprising Midrash Rabbah. At the beginning of Dvarim, it says there, Eile hadvarim, these are the words. And the Midrash Rabbah there says, you know, don't read Dvarim, but Dvorim. These are the bees. What does that mean, these are the bees? The Jewish people are connected or compared to bees, that we all follow our leader loyally. Moshe Rabbeinu is setting out his speech here, and it's a praise of the Jewish people that, notwithstanding what happened earlier in Torah, at this stage they're all following Moshe loyally, like the bees follow the queen. And don't forget, the bees are very loyal to the queen. There is one queen bee, and there are millions of other bees, and they all live and die for her. We'll get into how bees live soon, and therefore that is one interesting connection. Then, of course, there's the Shofetet, Dvorah. Why is Dvorah called a bee? Interesting, Chulda is also the name of an animal, which is a weasel. Why would you call your daughter weasel? That's an interesting question. But Dvorah may be called Dvorah because she's a spokesperson. She communicates as an dibor, and also the queen bee issues all of the commands to the people by the buzzing of her wings and the scent that she gives out. She's the queen bee right in the middle. So it's interesting that Dvorah is called the bee. And also in Tehillim, I heard this many years ago from Rabbi Kimchi in London. I don't know if he got it from somewhere else, about the enemies of the Jewish people in Hallel are called Dvorim. Sabuni kedvorim. They surround me like bees. Why like bees? Because bees, when they come in to kill, they even kill at the expense of their own lives. They commit suicide as they kill because they know they won't be able to survive. So our enemies are so committed to destroying us that they even are prepared to commit suicide and kill themselves in the process of destroying us. That was true then. That, sadly, is true to this day. Our tefillah is the end of the pasuk, Dachu ke'esh kaitzim, that they should all be wiped out, like burnt out, like burning fire, and we should be get rid of the bees that are coming to sting us, even though they kill themselves in the process. Okay, so that's a little bit of hashkafic ideas about bees and honey, but let's get into the halacha, because this is where it gets very exciting. What is honey? How does it work? So I could have brought you so many things. I brought you something from the Australian Honeybee Industry Council, because I figure you've never had anything from them before, and they've certainly never been on any of my source sheets. So he says here, bees need two kinds of food. One is honey made from nectar, the sugary juice that collects in the heart of the flowers, and I brought you what nectar is made from, 55% sucrose, 24% glucose, 21% fructose. So it's obviously very tasty. That collects in the heart of the flowers, and the other comes from the anthers of the flowers, which contain numerous small grains called pollen. So bees collect nectar and pollen. Most bees gather only pollen or nectar. As she sucks the nectar from the flower, and by the way, it's only female bees that go collecting, most of the bees in the hive, the vast overwhelming majority, are females. The queen is obviously female. She has a whole swarm of females that are worker bees, collector bees, that make the hives, the beeswax, you know, givers, and all the people that put together all the feed, the ones that nurture the children. Where are the men? Where are the males? There are a couple of hundred drones, which are male, and their sole purpose is to impregnate the queen bee. Once they have done that, they're thrown out of the hive to die of starvation. That is their job. They know their place. They do what they're told. They do their business, and then they're out. Okay, fine. I'm not drawing any conclusions on any level from that. So the females, they gather the pollen and nectar. She sucks the nectar from the flower. It is stored in a special honey sac. She has a honey sac, which is separate to the rest of her digestive system. If hungry, she opens a valve in the nectar sac, and a portion of the payload passes through to her own stomach to be converted to energy for her own needs. So she can take some of the nectar into her system, but most of it stays, quote unquote, outside her system. The bee is a marvelous flying machine. She can carry a payload of nectar or pollen close to her own weight. Consider that even the most advanced design in aircraft can only take off with a load 1/4 of its own weight, and you will appreciate the miracle that the honeybee can remain airborne with such a load. When her nectar sacs are full, the honeybee returns to the hive. Nectar is delivered to one of the indoor bees and is then passed mouth to mouth from bee to bee until its moisture content is reduced from 70% to 20%. And this changes the nectar into honey. How do they do that? As each bee passes it on mouth to mouth to the next bee, it puts a little bit of bee saliva into it, which has enzymes which work on the sugar content of the nectar and turn that into honey. Now you're going to say to me, bee saliva doesn't sound very kosher. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, fine. Finally, the honey is placed in storage cells and capped with beeswax in readiness for the arrival of the newborn baby bees. Pollen is mixed with nectar to make bee bread and is fed to the larvae. A baby bee needs food rich in protein if the bee community is to flourish, as we hope it will. Now, bees actually are having a hard time. You may have heard about this. There are all sorts of theories as to why that might be. Some people think that they are suffering from human pollution. Some people think they've got allergies. I saw Rabbi Slifkin gave a drosh on this, and he said, well, they certainly have hives. Which, if you don't like it, Rabbi Slifkin's joke, not my joke. But one of the theories is that they suffer from a lack of genetic diversity. Because the domesticated bee population is all bred from the same very, sounds a bit like Ashkenazim, all bred from the same very small gene pool, and therefore they carry a lot of genetic problems within the gene body. When they were all in the wild, they were, cross-fertilizing with other bees, but now they're all from the same genetic group. So, I don't know what the answer to that is. You have to ask someone else on that. Intermarriage with Sephardi bees. Okay, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, number 12. So why is honey kosher? It comes from bees. Bees are treif. And we'll see the very starting point of this sugya is that everything that comes from a treif animal or insect is itself treif. Look at number 12. The Mishnah in Bechoras. Bechoras is going to be an important limud for us today. We don't often get a chance to learn Bechoras, but today we will. Behema tahira sheyalda kamin behema tamea. So if you have a kosher animal, a cow, but it gives birth to something that looks like a treif animal, looks like a horse, some genetic problem, mutar b'achila, don't worry about it. It looks like a treif animal, but it came from a kosher animal, it's kosher. So too, with tamei shi'alda kamin behema tahira, if you have a treif animal, a horse, that gives birth to something that looks kosher, looks like a cow, asur b'achila, you may not eat it. It looks kosher, but it's not. Why? Here's the golden rule. Shehayotze mehatame tame, vahayotze min hatahor tahor. Anything that comes from a tame animal is tame, is not kosher, and anything that comes from a kosher animal is kosher. Okay, fine. So why is honey kosher? Before we get to honey, the Gemara has to ask another question, which is... it doesn't matter. If you get insects also. If any kosher or species produces kosher and treif produces treif. Number 13. Bau minami Rav Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes the following shaila. Mei raglaim shel chamor mahu. What about drinking donkey urine? Now you may turn around and say, what a crazy thing to ask. And the answer is not at all. Actually, this was known to be an important medicinal substance in the ancient world, and maybe to this day. The Chazon Ish asks, well, shouldn't it be treif because it's disgusting? And he brings a very important klal, which is, there's nothing intrinsically disgusting about it. If we didn't tell you where it came from, and we gave it to you to drink, you might say, this is nice, what's this? Well, you don't want to know. But a food which is also because it's disgusting is intrinsically disgusting, like rotting food. You put it in your mouth, you spit it straight away, spit it out. The only thing that makes this disgusting is the association that we give to it, but that's an interesting hagdara of what is disgusting. It's not intrinsically a problem, therefore that's not the problem. So what could be the problem? What is the deal with this donkey urine? Why don't you ask about horses or camel urine? Why did you pick on donkeys? So there are two versions of this debate. So the first version is, Dususim ugmalim loim mibai. We didn't ask about horses or camels, even though they may have important medicinal purposes. Loibi boilu, they didn't ask. The loy akiri, they're not thick in substance. The loy damu lechalav, they're not like milk, meaning they just seem like water. And what's the deal? Maya ol, maya nafak. It's just water in, water out. Meaning, according to this version of the debate, horses and camels, we have no problem with it because they didn't seem to add anything of themselves. It's just water in, water out. It seems like what went in came out, and therefore, why should it be treif? There's no camel essence in it. No excretion from the camel. I'm not getting into the biology of this now, but that's what the first point is. But we worried about donkeys. Donkey urine, I've not done a study in this. It really doesn't look like the others. It seems like a separate substance. It's thick. It's got a, looks like a milky the substance to it. So what's the deal? Do we say it was excreted by the donkey and it's asa? Or Dilma, Maya ol, Maya nafik, or maybe also here it's water in, water out. The Haida Achiri, and why is it thick in substance? Hevla debisrahu. It's just the warmth, the heat of the donkey's body has kind of turned it a little bit, but it's really just water in, water out, and it's not a problem. So which is it? Is it excreted, or is it just passed through? That's the first version. That the problem is if it's excreted, it's a problem. But if it's just ejected or emitted, it's not necessarily a problem. The Ikad Amri, there is another version of the debate. Why didn't we ask about horses and camels? Not because they're unproblematic, water in, water out. Because the loishatu inshi, because people don't drink that. They only drink donkeys. Meaning, in theory, horses and camels would have been a problem as well. And we'll see, according to this version, it's not just a problem if it's excreted by the animal, but even if it's ejected, if it comes out, I don't care how it comes out, but if it comes out of a treif animal, it's a problem. So horses would be a problem, but we didn't ask about them because nobody uses that. Kimi b'ilahu de chamor, we asked about donkeys on the third line here. The shasinsh, people drink this, umale de yarkuna. It's a cure for jaundice. For the doctors amongst us, this might be something to think about, okay? But apparently it's a cure for jaundice. Mai, so what's the halacha? Amalhu Rav Sheshis. Now this is Rav Sheshis. Tanitua, why are you even asking? It's obvious, it's pashut, it's taught in a brisa. Hayotze, in a Mishnah, in Bechoras. Hayotze min atame tame, hayotze min atahor tahor. The haninami, metame kase. It came from a treifa animal. According to this, I don't care what happened inside the animal. Anything that comes out of a treif animal is treif. Donkey urine is treif, says Rav Sheshis. Meisve, the Gemara asks the kasha on that from a brisa. Mipnima amru dvash dvorim mutter, so why is honey kosher? Oh, honey is kosher. Nobody debates that. Honey is kosher. Two reasons why honey might be kosher. This is where we're coming in now. Mipnei shimachnisas oisan legufan. Because what they do is that they bring it into their body, the ein matzoisasumikum, but they don't excrete it from their body. I brought you Rashi here. They bring it into their body. She oichel mipirchi ha'ilan. They eat from the flowers of the trees. Umehen naase hadvash b'me'em, and they create the dvash from the flowers. It's not from the bees. And it doesn't come out of them, Rashi says. The kashal Rav Sheshis, this is a problem for Rav Sheshis. Because he said the donkey urine is a problem because anything that comes out is a problem. Here in the case of the bees, because we said it wasn't produced by them, it's okay, even though it came out of them. So what are you going to do with that? So the answer is as follows. Rav Sheshis follows another shita. Hu da amakir Rav Yaakov. Rav Sheshis follows Rav Yaakov. Da amad duvsha rachmanashari. Dufsha is an exception. Meaning, Rabbi Yaakov says, anything that comes out of a treif animal is treif. Doesn't matter whether it was just in and out, made from something else, excreted internally. Anything that comes out is treif. With the exception of honey. It's just an exception. It's a gezeiras hakasav. The Torah permitted it as an exception to the rule. The Tani Rabbi Yaakov Omed, because Rabbi Yaakov learns the following. The pasuk says these are the things you can eat of creepy crawlies, all the grasshoppers, etc. We learn that these are the ones you can eat. But you can't eat the treif ones. Okay, the Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. Sheretz oif tamei behedyksiv. There's an explicit pasuk that says why I can't eat the treif ones. I don't need to infer from this that I can't eat the treif ones. So what does it actually teach? Ela sheretz oif tamei iyata oichel. It teaches you you can't eat a treif sheretz. Aval ata oichel masha oif tamei mashritz. But you can eat something which is excreted from a specific sheretz, the ezezeh, and what is that? Dvash dvorim, bees honey. It's an exception to the rule. Now, you might have thought, yachal, and we'll see in a minute why this is important, after dvash hagizin vatsirin, what about wasp honey? What about locust honey? And in case you say, well, they don't make honey, well, yes, they do, actually. Lots of different insects make sweet substance. We'll get later on to aphid honey. Aphid honey is produced by aphids, okay? And it's not kosher, for reasons that we'll see. So why is it dafka, specifically bees honey, not other insect honeys? Amrad lo, and the answer is no. Mari idle rabas devarim. Why did you include bees honey in the exception? Lahaitzia gizivatsirim, and you excluded the locusts and the wasps. Marbe ani dvash devarim she'ein lo shem levai. I'll include bees honey because it doesn't have an accompanying qualifying name. Meaning bees honey in the Tanakh is called dvash. Stam dvash. Now we call it dvash dvorim just for the purpose of this, you know, analysis. But in the Chumash, the Tanakh is just called dvash. That's real honey. Umoitzi, but that excludes umoitzi ani dvash agiza v'tzirim she'esh l'shem levai. But whenever I refer to wasp honey, I always call it dvash sirim. I don't call it dvash stam. So dvash is bees honey, that's the only exception. Okay, so let's recap. Rav Sheshes, who follows Rabbi Yaakov, says that the reason that honey is kosher is because it's just an exception to the rule. It's just an exception to the rule. Wasp honey's treif, aphid honey's treif, donkey urine's treif, because everything that comes out of a treif animal is treif, except for one, which is bees honey. Okay, that's Rav Sheshes' opinion. And the Gemara finishes off here. One second. But you're ignoring something that I'm sure you were thinking about, which is an explicit Mishnah in Machshirin that says that wasp honey is kosher. So it says, Kaman azla hadatanya. So who does the Mishnah follow when it says, Dvash hagizah v'atzirin tahor? The wasp honey is kosher. Umutu b'achila, and you can eat it. We'll see, tahor here means not just kosher, but it's ritually pure. We'll see what that means. The like Rebbe Yaakov. It follows another opinion which is not like Rebbe Yaakov. So just to summarize, what have we got here? There are two different potential reasons why bees honey is kosher. One is, it's just an exception to the rule. It should be treif, but it's actually not because the Torah just says bees honey is kosher. Another reason is, well, maybe like we said at the beginning, anything which is not specifically excreted by the animal, but it's just emitted by the animal from something else, is kosher. Now, yes, Rabbi Yaakov rejected that reason, but it's not gone away. And as we see, there's an explicit Mishnah in Machshirin that said the wasp honey is kosher. They're not part of the exception to the rule, no, because maybe that follows the general rule that anything which is not made from the animal itself is kosher. Now, why do I care? Either way, honey is kosher. This is going to be very relevant for a lot of honey products. If you go to a health food store, you'll see there's lots of products made from bees. You've got royal jelly, you've got propolis, you've got bee venom, I'm not making any of this up, you've got bees wax, and the answer to whether they are kosher may depend on the reason. If we say it's all really treif, it comes from a treif animal, the only exception is bee honey. So something that comes from a bee. So okay, these all come from a bee. Royal jelly comes from a bee, propolis comes from a bee, bees always come from a bee, so maybe if bees are the exception, that they're kosher. On the other hand, if we say, no, the reason bees' honey is kosher is because it's not really made by the bee, it's just nectar and pollen processed by the bee. Ah, well, in that case, royal jelly may be treif, because royal jelly is actually an excretion from the gland on the head of the queen bee. Royal jelly is exceptionally potent. The queen bee lives 40 times longer than the regular bees, because she eats this stuff all the time, and she gives it to the little larvae to kind of get them going. So it's meant to be a big health food, but it's excreted by the bee. So if that's the problem, then it is a problem. So we'll get to that later on, and we'll see royal jelly is a big shy. Okay, so hopefully we understood that. Yes?
How do we know that locusts are kosher?
The Torah explicitly says they are. It gives a whole list of locusts which are kosher.
Obviously, there's no question at all that looking at it the other way around.
Right, yes, but obviously, Gizin, which is the locust here, are from this sugi seem like they're non-kosher locusts. Whereas bees, we know for sure, are not kosher. Because there's no explicit reference to bees in the Torah as being kosher. Locusts, it says, are kosher. Certain locusts are treif. But there are no creepy crawly insects which are kosher. So bees definitely are treif. There's no question about that. Okay, what about the Shivas HaMashkim? What are the Shivas HaMashkim? So in halacha, a food can only become tamei if it has become wet with one of the Shivat HaMashkim, one of the seven liquids. So for example, if I pick an apple off a tree and I'm tamei, the apple is not tamei because it's never been wet. The rain doesn't count. It has to have been wet with a liquid that went on there on purpose. Once it's been wet, even though it's now dried, it is susceptible to tumah. Rav Hirsch explains, for example, that the reason for this is food is not really edible until you've washed it. He's a yekah. He's not going to eat his fruit unless you've washed them. But he says that's why it needs to be washed, because it only becomes fully edible when you actually wash it. So what are the seven liquids? Number 14, Shivas HaMashkim Haim, another mission from Machshirim, Hatal, Dew, again, only if it fell once the fruit was detached from the tree, Hamaim, water, Hayayin, wine, Hashemen, olive oil, Hadam, which is blood, okay, blood went on it, Hachalav, which is milk, Udvash Dvorim, and honey, Dvash Seirim, but what about Dvash Seirim, Tahor Umutzubachila? So that is actually Tahor, but it's mutter to eat, which is the Mishnah we talked about before. The wasps. That's where it says it's mutter. And how do we know, number 15, minay ledvashahu mashke, how do I know that the bee's honey is a liquid? It is a pasuk in Dvarim, in Hazinu, v'yankehu dvash misela. You suckled honey from the rock. Okay, that means it's a liquid. Now, ironically, of course, the pshat of that pasuk is probably talking about dates rather than bees honey, rather than honey, because it's talking about the fact that trees grew from the rocks and you ate fruit from the rocks, from the trees that came from the rocks. There's another pasuk which we say in davening, umitzur vashasvieka, and you got honey out from the rock. I found myself in one of these awkward moments when I used to daven in Munks in London, which is the Yekesh Shul. I had many awkward moments when I opened my mouth and something un-Yekish came out. One of them is when I was davening, and I just davening to myself a little bit louder maybe than I should have done, and I said, Umitzur Dvash Aspieka. And the man in front of me turned around and said, Umitzur Dvash Aspieka? Have you ever seen a rock made from honey? Umitzur Dvash Aspieka? It's Umitzur, comma, Dvash Aspieka. It's not Umitzur Dvash Aspieka. I'm sorry. And every time I say that now, I think it's umitzur, comma, dvash aspiyeg. It's not umitzur dvash, not a rock made of honey. Okay, fine. It's always good to be corrected. At least it was when I was a kid. Now everybody has a meltdown and needs a mental health day. Okay, fine.
How should you learn
pasuk? Which pasuk? Umitzur from the rock. I gave you honey, like this pasuk here, that you got fruit coming out of the rocks, etc. Rabbi Avadi Bebatanura explains the Mishnah in number 16, and he says, look at the number 16. Look at number 16. Why is wasp honey, according to this, kosher? We'll get to the actual psak soon. The Saka Daita Chamina, the Dafka Dvash Dvarim, number 16 at the bottom. You might have thought that it's only exception for bees honey. Rabbi Yekrada, the posik includes lahatiyu she'ein lo shem levai, because it doesn't have, like Rabbi Yaakov said in the Gemara, it doesn't have an accompanying name. We just call bees honey honey. Aval drash sirim, but the wasp honey she'yesh lo shem levai lo yehei motu. You might have thought that kamash malan comes along the Mishnah to teach us no da dvash sirata horomutar, that the wasp honey is also kosher according to this. Then bipnei ma amru dvash tvarim motu, because why is bees honey even kosher? Because they bring it in, but they don't secrete it. Meaning, the Avadim Avatanura brings the reason that it's not really made from the bees. He goes with that reasoning, not the reasoning of Rabbi Yaakov, that it's an exception. And he says, therefore, Dvash Sirim, Nami Machnis Asasan Legufam Ve'ema Matzah Asasan Legufam. So too, wasp honey is also not secreted. It's made from nectar in the same way. So what you're seeing here is a bit of a back and forth. Why exactly is honey kosher? Is it just an exception, in which case the wasp stuff is treif? Or is it no, because it's made in a certain way? The Rambam, number 17. Dvash dvorim. Here's a psak. Now we get into the halacha. Dvash dvorim. Ud dvash tzraim. Oh, wasp honey and bees honey and wasp honey, mutter mipnei she'enu matamsis kufan, they're mutter because they're not from excreted from their bodies, and a kainsin oisai, he gives you a little botany explanation here, what do the bees do, what do the wasps do, they gather it together, min ha'asavim, from all the plants, besoich bee, and they put it in their mouths, umikien oisai, and then they regurgitate it, but kaver it, in the hive, kidei she'yimsu oisai le'echo mimenu, because they need to eat it, b'yomoisai g'shamim, in the lean winter months. And therefore, he says wasp honey is kosher. Says the Rosh, number 18, Rabbeinu Tam Zal Pasuk B'Sefer Yashar. He brings Rabbeinu Tam in one of his Sfarim, Sefer Yashar, which is a psak sefer, not his commentary. The like Rabbi Yaakov, like the Rambam, we don't paskin like Rabbi Yaakov. Remember, Rabbi Yaakov said the wasp honey was treif because bees are the only exception. Okay, why? Mishum destam de Maseches Machshirim de like Yavaseh. This is a very interesting halachic point. How can Rabbi Yaakov stand up against a Stam Mishnah? Meaning a Stam Mishnah, meaning a Mishnah with no debated opinions in it. In Machshirin says, wasp honey is kosher. Rabbi Yaakov says, it's not. Okay, that's not a competition. Rabbi Yaakov versus a Stam Mishnah, we'll go with a Stam Mishnah. That's how the Rambam rules. That's how Rabbeinu Tam rules. The Rosh says, but this is very surprising. Vatema, but this is a surprise. This is a question. Vatema who? Shepasa kamoi masnisin de maseches machshirin. He paskins like this Stam Mishnah in machshirin. Why is that a problem? Kevin the Rav Sheshis loy sava kavasa. Rav Sheshis didn't hold that way. Rav Sheshis decided to hold like Rabbi Yaakov, the ha'ihu sava k'Rabbi Yaakov. Now you'll tell me, one second. If Rabbi Yaakov, who's a Tana, cannot stand up against a Stam Mishnah, how can Rav Sheshis, who is an Amora, have anything else to add? How can he stand up against the Stam Mishnah? And the answer is no, that's not how it works. We always follow the psak of the Amoraim. If the Amoraim, the rabbis of the Gemara, decide that this is an exception to the rule that we normally follow a Stam Mishnah, and in this we're going to follow Rabbi Yaakov, then that's definitive lahalacha. That's obviously a debate between the Rosh here, who paskins at the end. If you look, Ubishel Torah, when it comes to a Torah question, halach acha machmir, surely we have to be machmir, v'kein chilchasa, and this is the halacha, devash gizim v'tzeirim osa. Wasp honey is treif. Because he says, Rav Sheshes had to paskind. And the fact that we normally follow a Stam Mishnah is only a presumption. Rav Sheshes is telling us here that in this case, we don't. And therefore you have a machlokas. The Rambam says that wasp honey is kosher, and the Rosh says that wasp honey is treif. Again, because which is the reason for the kashrus of honey? The Rambam is going with the rule that it comes from outside the bee, from the pollen, and the Rosh is going with the rule that, no, honey is just an exception. Okay, fine. Number 19, Shulchan Aruch. Dvash tzraim, the honey from wasps, v'gizin, and from locusts is mutter. Okay, he's going with the Rambam. No surprises there. The Shulchan Aruch almost always goes with the Rambam, even though the Shulchan Aruch says, I go with the majority of the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh. He really means the majority of the Rambam, the Rambam, the Rambam, the Rambam, and the Rif, and the Rosh. Yeah? He will almost always go with the Rambam. Wasp honey is kosher. That's going to be bad news for our royal jelly. Bad news. Why? Because if wasp honey is kosher, it's because it comes from outside the bee. It's collected from the nectar. But stuff that comes out of the bee's head is going to be a problem. However, he brings v'yesh misha oser. There are views that say it's oser, that's the Rosh. That's going to be good news for our royal jelly. Because according to them, honey is kosher because bees are an exception. If bees are an exception, fine. So they're an exception for honey, for propolis, for beeswax, for royal jelly. Bees are an exception. What does the Ramah say? The Ramah says, "Ve'ein anu tzrichin lachush Loi, we don't have to worry about this machlokes, ki einu motze beinenu klal, because we just don't have anything but wasp, but bee's honey. We don't have any of this wasp honey. He says, don't worry about it, because it's not a shaila today. It's all fine, because it's only bee's honey. Well, the Ramon never walked into a health food shop. Because it is a very big shaila today. Because we have, not only do we have all sorts of strange stuff from the bees, but we have other wasp honeys as well, which we'll get to soon. Any question?
Is this the only place where you think you might instead of exception? Why is it so important to deal with that honey? You
know, I don't know if it's important or not. But the Torah says dvash is kosher. If Yonatan ate dvash, if Shinshon ate dvash, then dvash is kosher.
So where's the
question is not whether it's kosher, it's why it's kosher. That's the question. Is it kosher because it's just an exception to the rule, or is it kosher because there's something about the mechanism of honey that makes it kosher? Okay, so where do we draw the line? Bee's honey is kosher, wasp honey is a machlokas, propolis is a machlokas, etc., etc. What are some other kashrus concerns before we just get to the bottom line with those? So I put here a few kashrus concerns. The first I put here is the bee's knees. And in case you're wondering about where that expression comes from, I gave you a footnote about that as well. Okay? The bee's knees, Tosfos number 21. Yesh litzmoa achshav. There is a big problem today. Forget about everything we've said so far. Heich anu oichlin dvash devarim. How can we eat the honey? Bee's honey. V'halo raglei hadvorim me'uravim b'dvash. Those little black bits in your honey? That's the bee's knees. That's the bee's legs. V'af agav dahave pagam. Even though they don't taste nice. Okay. And isn't there a rule that noisein tam lifgam? If you drop an insect in your, you know, chicken soup and fish it out again, even though taste came out of it, it's not treif because it's a bad taste. Mikol makam hasheretz atzmoi deifgam mitzel kuleilma. Noisein tam lifgam means taste that comes out of a treif insect is not treif because it's a bad taste. But the insect itself is always treif, even if it's a bad taste. I don't suppose that, you know, many creepy crawlies taste nice when you crunch into them. They're still just as treif. So how can you eat honey? Look at what he says. L'chein nira l'Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam gives an answer here. Devadai ragli hadvorim. It must be that, and again, he doesn't say you can't eat the honey. Because there's no way, they had no way of getting the legs out of the honey. They're tiny, tiny little pieces. And honey is very sticky. It says, kivanda atzamot ba'alma ninhu. Since they're just like bones, mutarim. They're just dried out bones. Meaning, yes, an insect is treif, but if it's just a dried out bone of completely inedible insect, then it's not treif. So it must be that the bee's knees are kosher as well. Number 22, this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskens, dvash dvorim mutar, va'af al pi shegufi hadvorim mu'ravim bo, even though bits of the bees get mixed in with it, what you do, he says, he gives you an eitzah. What you do is you can heat up the honey so that they melt into the honey and then it's mutter. And then it's noisin tam lifgam. He doesn't rely on Rabbeinu Tam that says that the legs must be like bones. He says just heat it up a bit, make it all like one big mixture and then it's fine. Because it's all noisin tam lifgam, it's no problem, whatever taste came out of the legs. The Aruch HaShulchan in the late 19th century says, I have a better option for you. Filter the honey. Which obviously maybe is a technological option maybe they didn't have before. Number 23. Yesh li'zahar. You have to be careful. Libli le'echol dvash kodim sinun. Don't eat honey before it's been properly filtered. Bipnei tarogis advarim. Because it's got little bits of bees, unimalim, and then also ants. They obviously crawl into your honey, but they often get stuck in the honey. The shriach b'dvash, they're often in the honey. Leave your honey out for 5 minutes as Dan's there. The chena megay poshet ve'ein hashanas. And this is what we do, and you shouldn't do anything else, and therefore you need to filter your honey. Now, honey today, interestingly, is filtered pretty well, but it's also heated. They heat up honey today for production to make it flow more readily. And therefore, the honey that we have now is all preheated. You're going to say, isn't that a problem of bishul akum? Because now you've got cooked honey cooked by non-Jews. The answer is no, because honey is edible raw. And one of the exceptions to the rabbinic prohibition of bishul akum is any food which is edible in a raw state is still kosher, even though it's cooked by a non-Jew, and it's not a problem of Bishul Akum. So few. We've avoided the problem of Bishul Akum. There are some cashless organizations that say that honey is often heated on the same production lines as other treif products are heated, and therefore they require even regular 100% honey to have a kashrus certification. That is the position of the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinical Council. But most kashrus authorities do not say that. And they say that that's a very far-fetched concern. It's not a problem in almost, you know, all cases. And therefore, 100% pure honey that has nothing else in it is kosher even without a heksher. That is the position of many poskim today. Now go over to page 5. A couple of other issues. Additives. So cheap honey often contains flavorings. And that's when you've got to watch out. Because if your honey is cheap, it might have artificial sweeteners in. For example, orange honey often just has orange flavorings added to the honey. Now you thought that the bees only went to orange blossoms, and that's why it tastes of orange. I've got news for you, they just poured in some orange essence, and that has a kashrus question. I'm not saying it's treif, but it might need therefore certification, because you don't know where that came from. Also on Pesach, there are additives like corn syrup that put into honey, and therefore even if it says 100% pure honey, it might not be honey. Don't forget, under many regulations, certainly in Europe, they can say 100% pure, even if it's only, let's say, 98% pure. Because they say nobody cares about the 2%. Well, I've got news for you. We do, because bottled b'shishim, shishim is less than 2%. So that's something to watch out for. Now, what about some of these other exciting bee products? So royal jelly. So royal jelly is a highly nutritious substance secreted from the hypopharyngeal gland and the mandibular glands located in the head of the bee. So the queen bee secretes certain substances. Some claim it has homeopathic qualities. It's fed to all bee larvae, etc., etc. The larvae are fed for 3 days to develop, etc. Only those destined to be queens continue to be fed on royal jelly after that. And as I mentioned to you, the queen bee has a life which is 40 times longer than the rest of the bees, and therefore that's why people want to eat royal jelly. Because if it's good for the queen bees, then maybe it's good for me too. Is it kosher? Maybe yes, because bees are an exception, and it comes from a bee. Maybe no, because honey is kosher because it's not made from bee secretions, it's made from pollen. And this is made from bee secretions. And the Tzitz Eliezer permitted it. And I brought you a psag there of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I'm not going to read it all through now in 24, where he says, look, I know that Tzitz Eliezer says it's mutter, but I'm not sure. And I used to say it was mutter, but now I'm wondering whether it's really osser. And I'm not sure. And he ends, at the end, quite unusually, the last sentence at the end of 24 says, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Ulechein me'az eini oime bezeh loy issa v'loy heta. When people ask me, is royal jelly kosher? He replies, that is a psak. If your posek says yes, it means yes. If he says no, it means no. And if he says, then it means something else. Okay, and now you know. So, and then that's why if you look at different kashrus authorities, the OU says not kosher. Star K brings different opinions and says it should not be eaten, which obviously is different from non-kosher. Kaf K brings different opinions. Also some ones which say it's mutter, like the Tzitz Eliezer. Honeycomb. Honeycomb is fine. Honeycomb is just honey, although you need to look even more carefully for the bee's knees, because honeycomb often has that in it and is not melted. Well, obviously, it's not heated, because if you heated it, it would just all dissolve, and therefore you just have to check your honeycomb. Another halacha on Shabbos, you are not allowed to squeeze honey out of honeycomb. This is nothing to do with tolesh, which is if it's still on the ground. But even if it's detached from the ground, this is the malacha of dush. Extracting a substance from the matrix in which it grew, like squeezing juice out of a fruit, is a malacha on Shabbos. Squeezing honey out of the comb is also a malacha. Okay, bee pollen. Bee pollen's fine, because it's just pollen. Even though it has bee saliva in it, don't worry about that. It's bottle of shishim, and you can be happy. Over the page to page 6, bee bread, which is also called ambrosia. I learned a ton researching this year. Bee bread is a mixture of honey and pollen and is kosher. beeswax app. Now, beeswax should be a problem, potentially, like royal jelly, because beeswax is excreted by the bee. I brought you a footnote, 2021. Beeswax is a substance which is secreted from the wax glands in the bee's stomach. Yes, people they put beeswax on fruit. They put beeswax in jelly beans to make them shiny. Okay? So beeswax is... Who knew the bees had so many secretions? That like the stomach gland and the head gland and this gland. So beeswax is a shyla. The thing that saves it potentially is it's not really edible in its raw state. It's not royal achila, and therefore most kashrus authorities say, even though it does come from a bee, it is kosher because it's not edible. Yeah. Honeycombs. It's got the bee's wax in the comb.
And the honeycomb is edible.
Yes, that's true. Are you sure that there's nothing? That's the same as beeswax, the honeycomb of the comb? The comb of the honeycomb is beeswax? You could be right, in which case it should be fine. You're right. But my research led me to believe that the bee's wax may be something a bit different to the comb of the honeycomb. But I don't know. We need some bee enthusiasts to research this and write in. Okay, bee venom. Now, bee venom is extracted from the venom glands of the bees. And it's used as an anti-inflammatory and to treat arthritis. This is propolis? This is the same as propolis. Oh, I skipped propolis. We'll get back to propolis. Sorry. Bees venom. So is bees venom okay? Well, if it's a secretion, then maybe it's not okay because it comes from a trace animal. Unless, of course, bees are an exception. Starkey rules that it's okay as a medication if it's bottled b'shishim or that a sick person can eat it in an unusual way. Meaning it's not very kosher, but it's not very trafe either. Maybe it's mutter for a chayle if taken in an unusual way. Sorry, I skipped propolis. Propolis is a resin made by bees from a combination of tree resin, bee saliva, and beeswax. So they use, propolis has been used for thousands of years in medication. They use it to make cough drops, to treat mouth pain and cold sores. And like beeswax, many of the kashrus authorities say it's okay because either it's not edible or it's all bottle. It's bottle b'shishim, you can't taste it, it's not detectable there. And some actually rule that propolis is actually kosher as well. Star K rules that it's kosher. A couple of last things, three last things. What about Apis mellifica? If I'm producing that right, mellifica. This is a homeopathic remedy made from the actual body of the honeybee. Treif. Sorry, that was definitely treif. However, it's often bottle b'shishim. Again, an undetectable. If you can't see it and it's bottle b'shishim, then it might be halachically permissible. Ask your local bee rabbi on that one. E4, honeydew, forest honey. That sounds lovely. Unfortunately, it's nothing to do with the melons, not the melons. Honeydew, the product, is actually made by a partnership between bees and aphids. The aphids take out the tree sap, secrete it onto the trees, and the bees collect it and process it. Okay? This is therefore definitely, well, not definitely. The OU say it should be avoided. Because... I think it has to have a special name. If it says 100% honey, then it's not forest honey.
No, I see. This is collected from it. Doesn't
right, right. Meaning they label it as forest honey. And it comes from aphids. People want it dafka because it comes from the aphids. Because they say the aphids have special, you know, properties that they want the aphid honey rather than the bee honey. But from our perspective, it gives it halachic problems because it's at least to a significant extent from the aphids. And finally, Melipona honey. Melipona honey comes from Mexico, but it's made by a special species of bee which is different from a regular bee. So here we have, the Ramos said, don't worry about it, because we only have bee's honey here. Well, now we don't. Now we have something from everywhere, and the honey that comes out of Mexico is made from a different species, therefore we're concerned that it's wasp honey. Ah, isn't there a machlokas, if it's kosher or not? The Shulchan Aruch says it's kosher, yeish omrim that it's osa. Okay, we don't get involved in that. We're not going to eat it, because it's a sofik doraisa, and it may be treif. So hopefully that gave you a little bit of a feeling about honey. There's one last halachic point I will make. When you make challah, and you do hafrashas challah, okay, so you only make a brocha on taking the challah if the dough is baked with one of the Shivat HaMashkim. Okay, so if you bake dough, I wouldn't use dam or dew for this, but if you bake dough with fruit juice, with pure fruit juice, then you don't make a bracha on Hafrashas Challah. But if you bake dough with honey, then you do, because honey is one of the Shivat HaMashkim. So there we are. Who knew that there were so many halachic things to say about honey? But next week we go on to Pastor Shnu. I'll take a question afterwards. I'll finish because it's 11:15. But thank you very much, and please God, we'll meet up next week.